Hello.
Hello.
Hey, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Perfect.
No problems like last time.
Yeah, this time I thought ahead. Alrighty, well, we are back. I certainly had a lot of fun last time, and I figured, you know, with the help, might as well do it again if it's still fun. Sounds like you are still up for this too.
Yes. I'm not sure we'll go through the whole series, but for now, at least it's fun.
Yeah. So, they had a recap of the previous episode, not of the previous episode, of the first book, which was chapters 1 through 26, I think?
I don't remember the chapter numbers, but it's the it's like the first week of school arc.
Yeah, exactly. And I actually am now in the super nerdy position of taking notes on a analysis podcast for the analysis of it. So, I actually have notes now, which I don't know how to feel about that. I feel very Hermione-esque, I guess.
Yeah, I actually took notes on the whole thing this time. I listened through it on, like, 2x speed over the past, like, hour or two.
Excellent. Well, I don't know. Would you like to kick it off? I guess before we start, with that, since they didn't mention it, how do you feel about the whole separating the whole work into books aspect of things?
I think it's a good idea. I know I've had, like, trouble reading Worm because it's just a straight shot. There's no divisions larger than the arcs, so I'm just kind of binging, and then there's no clear starting or stopping point for me. But, like, I think being able to divide the book into, well, books...
Yeah.
Is good.
I think Worm it does have the arcs, and each arc is about a novella in length, so those are pretty good as long as, you know, you have the discipline to stop after an arc as opposed to binging.
Right. Yeah. Which I haven't in the past. I'm listening to We've Got Worm now, and so I think splitting the arcs up with that will help.
Yeah. I think Brian said when he was reading Worm, there were times where he was just, like, reading for 8 hours and then realized he had to get up to work in 3 hours, and it's like...
Yeah, that was discussed in this episode.
Okay. Right, okay, see? So we're already talking about the episode we're supposed to talk about. It works. Yeah, I don't know. I liked the breaking up into books as well, and, like, when he first said he was going to do it, I thought, how is this going to happen? But then it's a very natural break right at the end of the first week. Like, he writes the letter to his parents to cap it off, and there's a lot of exposition in setting up the world that happens in the first week, and, like, letting the audience know exactly how this is going to be different from canon and what the overall feel of it was. So I think it's a very good place for a first book break.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if all of the other book breaks, I haven't really evaluated them all. I think the one, like, two sentence chapter fell in an awkward place, maybe, but everything else seemed fine.
All right, well, should we talk about the We Want More episode?
I suppose that is the entire point of this podcast, so.
what would you like to bring up then? Shoot first.
Let's see, I don't have any specific topics I wanted to bring up. I just, like, have a bunch of notes from the episode. I guess one of the topics they discuss early on is the, like, a mystery aspect of HPMR.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because, like, it's not really a mystery story. There are elements of the story that are not explicitly said. The main one jumping to mind, obviously, being Quirrell's identity. But it's not like the story is designed to hide them, which is, I think, something that Yukeski has talked about when discussing HPMR. Like, he sort of he knows things that are not stated to the reader, but he's not, like, specifically trying to make them mysteries. He's just, like, writing the story exactly how it would go without specifically stating directly.
Yeah, he's built a world and he knows the hidden information, and I don't think that makes it a mystery. I think Brian is almost being done a disservice by being told that it's a mystery over and over, because in a mystery, you know there's a thing, you know what the thing is you need to find out. You know, there's a dead body, and you need to find out who murdered him, or, you know, the bank got broken into, and you need to find out how this locked room someone got into or out of it, that kind of thing. Whereas, like you said, this is just kind of a story with hidden information, but it doesn't feel like a mystery.
So, like, making predictions about elements of the story is still a lot more, I don't know, in a book like H.P. Morar, where the world is built to be really consistent, you can make predictions about how the rest of the story will go better than in most other stories.
Mm-hmm.
But that's definitely, like, something about H.P. Morar, but does it make it a mystery? I don't think so.
Yeah. I do like the whole that Brian is waffling on whether Quirrell is Voldemort or not, because I guess after the reveal, I know that after the reveal, a lot of people were like, well, it was obvious from the beginning he's Voldemort in canon and all that, and I personally have strong issues with that, because it was very specifically signaled to the audience that this is a different Quirrell and this is an alternate universe, so that could have been one of the changes, but the fact that, like, Brian came into this at first being like, oh yeah, Quirrell, he's Voldemort, as we all know from canon, and now, just after a few chapters, he's like, is he Voldemort? I don't know. And I'm like, thank you! I feel validated.
Right. I mean, I think if you look at the evidence, I don't think it was, like, particularly unclear, because there definitely were people who just, like, caught the Voyager Horcrux thing and then were convinced the entire story. I think.
Really?
I mean, I wasn't around, but, like, I was looking at the fan art page on the H.P. Morar website, and it seemed like it wasn't stated very clearly, but it said something like there were some group of people who got it, and to not click on the fan art links for that chapter, because...
Oh, there was the fan art of the Voyager plaque with Voldemort as the man instead of...
Right, right. Yeah. That's what specifically was linked to there.
I thought of that as a fun thing, but I still didn't think that this was evidence that Quirrell was Voldemort.
So you knew about that before reading the end of the story?
Oh, yeah.
Ah.
The thing is,
So that was a connection people made, but it was not seen as conclusive evidence.
He's certainly not, like, canon Voldemort, who is just cartoonishly evil and stupid. And the fact that he was a different kind of Voldemort who's incredibly smart and good at pretending to be other people and who was, you know, playing this cartoonish villain for laughs at first is not something that is, it's not easily guessable. I don't think anyone would have been justified in guessing that specific thing.
Well, of course. That,
so if they were guessing that he's canon Voldemort, they would be wrong and just happened to guess that he was Voldemort correctly by accident.
Mm-hmm.
Although, yes, there was other evidence. It's, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it was clear. It's a reasonable guess, but yeah, I'm not sure exactly how solid all the evidence was.
Yeah, to say it was obvious is just almost insulting to, I mean, not just to the reader, but I think almost insulting to Eliezer's writing ability too, because even if he meant for it to be obvious, the fact that he literally changed Voldemort to be a different character means that, and did it so well, means that he is not obviously canon Voldemort.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not canon Voldemort, period.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's all I got on that. Shall we move on, or did you have more?
Sure, we can move on.
Okay. This was brought up in the Discord a few times, and they also mentioned it in the episode, so I think this is a good place for it. At the very start of the story, there's a little disclaimer by Eliezer saying, hey, you know, if you don't like it by chapter 5, this might not be for you. If you don't like it by chapter 10, just plain give up on this. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of talk that, like, this is being treated now as sort of a pivot point almost. Like, everyone is being told, at least read up to chapter 10, and maybe by then you'll start liking it. And a bunch of other people were saying, that's not realistic at all. If you don't like Harry from the very start, you're just not going to like Harry, because his character basically remains the same. Which I don't know. What do you think about this?
I don't think Harry, like, fundamentally changes as a character over the course of the story very much. It's obviously not, like, zero character development. But, I mean, I do think that, like, when Brian saw that the Sorting Hat was, like, pointing out that Harry was not just, like, perfect, helped him realize that, like, this is, like, it's not just Yudkowsky writing an asshole character and thinking that that's totally okay.
Yeah.
So I think there is something there at chapter 10, but treating it as you have to read up to there even if you hate the story because you might start liking it there is not the right way to handle it.
Yeah. To me, it always felt like that was supposed to be more of a, if you forced yourself to read this far and you don't love it yet, just don't keep forcing yourself. It's not for you. Mm-hmm. You're not going to like it. Please stop. And treating it like, you know, oh, if you don't like it at first, it's okay. You'll like it once you get to chapter 10, I think it's a wrong way of reading it. And it's going to bring people to this place where they feel like if they haven't started liking Harry a lot more by even a ways after chapter 10, that something is either wrong with them or the story or something. Whereas mm-hmm. I think it's just not a good match necessarily.
Right.
Like, I agree with the people who said, like, if you hate Harry from the start, you're probably never really going to like his character. Because for me, a lot of the fun was watching Harry do all those things that I kind of wished I could have done at his age.
Right.
Being snarky to dumb people and finally telling the adults, you know what? You don't have to take me seriously, but I'm not taking you seriously either.
Yeah, I do really enjoy that. But I have, like, appreciated the added perspective Brian has that, like, is that actually, like, a good thing as much as it sounds appealing?
Well, no. Usually power fantasies are not good things in reality, but they're fun to read.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's some power fantasies that just aren't fun to read. Like, I used to when I was a kid, like the whole I'm strong enough to beat you up, rawr, kind of Dragon Ball Z thing. And now that is not the kind of power fantasy I enjoy anymore, but, you know, each fantasy has their own people that like it for their own reasons. And it doesn't have to be good, it just has to be enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, it does seem like he's starting to enjoy it a little more, I think in large part because he's getting to see other characters that he actually enjoys, like Hermione and McGonagall.
Mm-hmm. And, like, Draco, even.
Yeah. God, Draco's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's not awesome in the, like, he's a great person way.
No,
he's just a really interesting character.
Yes, yes. He's not awesome as a person, he's awesome to read about in fiction.
Mm-hmm. At least compared to canon.
Yeah. I really liked Brian's point that he feels like someone who is invited over to try everybody's grandma's favorite apple pie. And everyone's like, isn't grandma's apple pie so great? Brian's like, I'm not going to tell these people I don't like their grandma's beloved apple pie, you know? Even though I'm not a fan of this particular way to make apples.
Mm-hmm. Although, I mean, he does, like, say that he's at least enjoying reading the book. Like, he doesn't hate it.
Yeah, doesn't hate it, but it almost feels unfair to him what we've done.
Mm-hmm. It does, like, I think the point he's getting at is that not that he wants to say he dislikes it, but that it's awkward to criticize it.
Yeah.
Especially with the comparison then of it to our holy book.
That was really interesting. And yeah, I had that as a note for later on. That has got to be like super awkward for him. Also, I like their whole riffing on, you know, it's not really the Holy Book. It's the New Testament that kind of points people over to the real Holy Book or whatever. But how do you feel about that? If nothing
I mean,
else,
it's a rationality is philosophy, much like religions are. It's like there are definitely connections to be drawn there, although obviously like there's no like supernatural element.
Yeah, but it certainly has some things to say about how people can live a more optimal life, and a lot of people have taken it to heart and have changed their lives or had their lives changed from it. So, in that respect, yeah. But I gotta say, I am super happy that my religion's holy book is a piece of Harry Potter fan fiction. Because that is the exact level of seriousness I want in a religion, you know? I don't want anybody to be going out and martyring themselves, and I don't think that would ever happen over a Harry Potter fanfic.
I mean, there are reasons to sacrifice your life that are valid.
Yeah.
I can't think of any scenario happening in which it's, I don't know. Would sacrificing your life somehow to stop an unfriendly AI from being created count as murdering for rationality?
Huh. Well,
I feel like religions I feel like religions often have like a value system, whereas rationality, to the extent that has a value system, is just like humanism in, or like just being a good person in general.
Yeah.
Like
I like that. Like any good holy book, it writes its message in, you know, stories and parables, ways that speak to emotions rather than like a philosophy textbook, which speaks more to the mind. Like religions are supposed to grab you by the emotions.
Mm-hmm. As opposed to the sequences, which are more like a textbook to some extent, although they have stories in them and other stuff.
Yeah.
They're not written like a textbook, but they're still like, they're not stories for the most part.
Yeah, they're entertaining, but they're not as, like, personally story-slash-narrative-driven. Like, the New Testament basically is just a long story.
Well, the Gospels are.
Thank you. Yes, the Gospels.
The letters are not as much.
Right.
And then Revelation is just weird.
Yeah, Revelations is fun. I like the fact that you can basically read anything you want to into Revelations. You're like, oh, ho, these writings mean that this and this is going to happen.
But it's Revelation singular, by the way. My theology teacher made sure that we all knew that.
Oh, that it's singular?
Mm-hmm.
Ah, okay. All right, shall we? Yeah, I don't know what to... It is, if nothing else, it's nice that we can ask outsiders to come in and critique our holy book and not, like, you know, kill them, right?
Yes, that is good.
I don't know. I don't know exactly how to take that because I hate religion in general, but, like, this certain level of fun and mixed with insight is something I'm okay with, if you want to call that a religion. And for a long time, I've been thinking that, you know, it would be good to have the whole religious protections that the Constitution gives to other religions for a philosophy that's less insane like this.
Someone should get on that, really.
Oh, yeah.
The Scientologists did it. How hard can it be?
Yeah, that's true. Do you know what? I should look into this when I have free time again.
Didn't, like, John Oliver do an episode where he made a church?
He did, but it's not like it took off.
Right, but is that the same process we'd have to do?
Yeah, I just feel like most rationalists would be so allergic to the idea. Like, even I think it's funny, but I don't know if I could go through with it, you know?
I mean,
it gives me...
I am absolutely down with this idea.
Yeah. I like the idea in principle. I just can't do it.
I'm not allergic to the concept of religion. Okay. Probably because I've been living in a Christian household my whole life, and that includes several years since I have joined the rationality community. Mm-hmm. So I sort of just like had to gain an appreciation for the good parts of it to not go insane.
I mean, I was raised in religion too, but it was not a good raising. I get the feeling that your religion basically did not abuse you. Oh. So.
Yeah, no, I have not been abused.
Yeah, and I mean, I obviously was never physically abused by my religion, but very much psychologically, and so that is a thing that, like, you don't want to ever get near that. You're like, ooh, the broom!
Right.
The broom is bad and I must stay away.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it hasn't been all perfect, but it's, like, not terrible.
Yeah. Alright, well, should we get back to this episode thing?
Yes, I guess.
Okay. Brian. Okay, so Brian, is it just me, or has he... I think he's changed a bit, and he hasn't even entirely realized it. Like, they... I think it was Matt that brought up... By the way, Matt? Fucking awesome having Matt in this episode.
Yeah, that was good.
I gotta say, I mean, I love both Brian and Steven, and I think they're good, but, like, when Matt got on the episode, I was like, oh... This is someone who's been doing this exact thing for years. Like, there was a certain level of polish and knowing exactly what he was doing that he brought to it that you just can't get without, you know, at least many months of experience.
Mm-hmm.
It was a contrast having him there. And I was like, wow, that's impressive. I still love this podcast, and I'm sure the hosts are going to, like, you know, get more into it and, like, I'm sure Matt wasn't this amazing when he first started either.
But... I mean, I've been listening to the first several episodes of We've Got Worm, and they're pretty good.
Okay.
Although, I mean...
They were already doing the other thing before.
Were they doing... I mean, they were doing podcasting before. I'm not sure if it was a, like, analysis podcast.
I think they were doing basically movies and stuff, like kind of what they do with the Doofcast.
Right, I mean, they were discussing media, of course. Yeah. So, I guess even if it wasn't just walking through a story, it was still the same sort of thing.
Yeah. Anyways, as Matt was saying, that the pointing out the flaws in Quidditch and in canon stuff was done in a very kind of lighthearted and playful way, and they all seemed to agree on that. That, you know, yeah, this was all in good fun. There was obviously a love for the canon source material here, and he even, like, when Matt said even Ron wasn't, like, hated, he just didn't fit the story, at the time, Brian, like, didn't push back on it. He almost seemed to agree, and thinking back to those first few episodes, I think that Brian at that time was much more averse to how the story was pointing out the flaws in Quidditch, and specifically of writing Ron out of it. He seemed pretty upset at that. I'm not sure if he seems to have become much more charitable to the reading, probably in part because he enjoys it. But I don't know. Do you think Brian feels like he was always that way? Or does he realize that he's changed on this?
I mean, Steven specifically points it out in the episode that Brian is describing his earlier opinions as, I guess, less critical of the book than they actually were.
Okay.
And I don't remember exactly how Brian reacted to that, but he, like, seemed to acknowledge it as a possibility, although I don't think he was like, oh, that's absolutely true immediately or anything.
Yeah. I do think it's interesting how he has come around, though, despite not liking it at first. It took more than 10 chapters, but he definitely seems more into this now. Like, I get the feeling he's going to be more charitable going forward and possibly even reading into it. Reading the text more carefully.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just last week we had the stuff with Neville and all, so...
Yes.
Although that might have just been a few particularly bad mistakes that he... Or, like, lines that he missed or something.
Yeah.
That episode.
Well, he did, Brian, in this most recent episode, he did point out, this was like an amazing point, that Harry, the only time he gets to just act like a normal 11-year-old is when he's around McGonagall. Like, all the rest of the time, he either has to be on his guard or making up for adult shortcomings or something, but when McGonagall's around, he can finally just sort of relax a little bit and be a kid. And mm-hmm. I thought that was a very, like, that reading, I liked it. I think it's one of the reasons Harry slips up later in the story, because he does get too comfortable with McGonagall and with not always being in hero mode when she's around. But I hadn't thought of that before myself, that this is finally when Harry gets to feel a little bit safe. And that was mm-hmm. that was touching and nice.
Mm-hmm.
And something I hadn't thought of on my own. So mm-hmm. Brian has had me taught me another thing.
Yeah. I don't know if it's like McGonagall in particular, or just like adults that he can trust in general. Like, I think Quirrell, I mean, he can't exactly be a normal 11-year-old around Quirrell, but mm-hmm. like the same sort of thing of like not necessarily having to be in hero mode the whole time.
Yeah. But with Quirrell, he's much more like someone trying to impress senpai. Whereas
right.
with McGonagall, he's like able to be nurtured.
Right, right.
Matt made this excellent point that Harry's dark side is super good at being other people, like when they're doing the occlumency test.
Hmm.
Which means absolutely nothing to Brian right now, but but later on when we realize that Quirrell, you know, pretended to be Voldemort and pretended to be Monroe and is absolutely amazing at just being other people or being other personalities, and that Harry is in fact a copy of Quirrell, it was a very cool another little puzzle piece that fell in. Like, when mm-hmm. Harry goes into dark mode, it's much easier for him to be other people, because in dark mode, he's much closer to Voldemort.
Right. Have we seen examples of that so far?
I don't think we have. I think that was probably a little bit of a spoiler.
I mean, I don't think Brian would notice. I think...
Oh, I didn't either. I just thought it was like, yeah, superpowers right. you get when you go into dark mode. It makes sense.
Right. I mean, there's sort of the part in the chapter where they're bringing the Dementors, or he goes to talk to Dumbledore about the Dementors being brought in for the Patronus practice.
Mm-hmm.
And when he goes into dark mode, he is instantly able to imagine what someone would be trying to do. I guess Voldemort specifically, but...
Uh-oh.
I'm not sure that's pretending to be Voldemort as much as just being able to model. I can't even think of any examples of Harry specifically pretending to be some... Well, I mean, I guess the Azkaban arc.
Yeah, that was the big one.
But is he even in his dark mode during that?
Man, it's been so long and they haven't gotten to it yet, so I haven't reread it.
Like, I don't think he's just maintaining dark mode that entire time.
No.
That seems like it would be, especially in Azkaban, like...
Yeah, that could kill him.
Can dark mode Harry use the Patronus?
I think, no, he can't. I think actually dark mode Harry is much more susceptible to the Dementors too, isn't he?
Right, because I mean, Voldemort
yeah.
/ Quirrell can't do Patronus at all, so... It would make sense that, like, Dark Mode Harry would at least be limited in some sense.
Yeah.
Where did Matt come up with that from?
I don't know, but it sounds familiar.
I mean, it makes sense because of the connection to Voldemort, but I have no idea what if he's referring to something specific or what.
Yeah. Maybe there's an incident with Snape? You know what? This is probably boring radio. We'll figure it out later when we get to it.
We'll ask him, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. I have one more thing about the episode. But did you want to do more? Did you have something? Because I think I've been dominating for a little bit.
Let's see. I took notes, but I did not prepare talking points. So I've sort of just been letting you take the lead. There's a few, like, small things that I thought were interesting, like, when Stephen calls Sherlock Holmes a wizard.
Yes.
That was funny.
That was cool. And, the thing that really annoys me about Sherlock Holmes is it's not even wizard magic powers, he's right by Arthur Fiat. Like, the stuff that he observes can have multiple explanations, and the fact that he chooses one of them, which just happens to be the correct one, is entirely a coincidence that only works because the author's on Sherlock's side.
Mm-hmm. Which, like, does not happen in HP Noir.
No.
Like, no one makes crazy deductions like that. Except arguably Quirrell, but we aren't, like, seeing his thought processes, so he likely has explanations that are more valid than Sherlock Holmes's, at least.
Yeah. And he often has information that is not known to Harry.
Right.
Like, he knows that he is Voldemort, for starters.
Yeah, that's one thing.
And thus knows everything Voldemort knows, or knew.
Which is probably a lot.
Yeah. But yeah, Sherlock Holmes, definitely magic bullshit powers right there.
Not the person we were representing community.
I did really love Matt's point that this is a thing that purports to actually make you better if you read it and try
to implement it.
And that it seems to do that, which is fucking awesome.
I mean, I don't know how much my thinking has been improved from reading HP Noir, but I definitely, like, think there are people who have had significantly improved thinking processes.
Yeah. And, you know, in addition to that, it also often points people towards less wrong, which is also good for the brain. Boy, that came out awkward.
Yeah, I feel like I need to actually do rationality practice if I want to level up much, rather than just reading a book.
Yeah.
Being introduced to, like, the ideas of rationality is enough for me to, like, catch some errors in my thinking and correct them, but not enough to, I guess, actually start getting things right.
It's hard to do. I want to go to a CIFAR at one of these times to see how they do it, because I'm not sure how you could make exercises to get better at it, aside from just trying to do it in life and learning through trial and error, but there's something, apparently, because they do something.
I mean, there's, like, the super prediction stuff that you can do for one specific example. I don't know of... Well, I mean, that's just prediction in general, which is, like, a lot of stuff.
Just practicing being able to not have a concrete idea, like a concrete belief, but more of a, like, cloud of beliefs. Like, my belief is 80% this, but maybe 20% that is... It's quite a change.
Right. And just, like, being able to account for multiple different possibilities in your thinking is not how humans typically work.
Right.
They just, like, follow one mainline possibility for the most part.
Yeah. I saw... Well, I don't know. That's probably getting off topic. It was... And it's political anyway, so I'm not going to go there. Let's move on. they got to the part where Harry faces off against Snape, and then mentioned on the Discord there was kind of a number of people very vehemently disagreeing with them about Harry needing to be punished, and that Harry did the right thing and should not have been punished at all. And they kind of doubled down on the whole, no, Harry really did need to be punished because it's important to retain classroom discipline or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I had a thought on that. I thought it was interesting that they both, like, doubled down and still agreed that discipline needed to be maintained. Do you have anything on this?
One thing that I noted is that they seem to think that people were objecting to the time turner being taken, which I don't think anyone was. I think everyone agreed that, like, he clearly actually was abusing the time turner, and that was a problem. But a lot of people in the Discord were saying that, like, him standing up to Snape is really a good thing and something that they should try to promote in some sense.
Yeah.
Although, yeah, I don't think was Harry punished in any way other than having to make an apology?
Yeah, no, not directly. His punishment was basically the apology, but the point was that he had to have the appearance of having been punished by the school administration rather than them supporting what he did.
Right. I mean, I think the apology was a fairly reasonable thing to do. Like, actually giving him detention or something, I might be against, but I don't think, like, having him say that, like, you know, I did interrupt your class time, like, that, like, so I don't know.
I had the good fortune of, right after listening to this, listening to Sam Harris's latest podcast about the nuclear issue, I guess.
I'm very interested in seeing how this connection works.
Yeah, no, it's going to be, it's a stretch, but it's a similar situation, although obviously on a vastly different scale, because one is, you know, the wiping out of the human race, and the other one is standing up to an abusive teacher. But, you're familiar with Stanislav Petrov, right?
Yes.
Okay, so for anyone who isn't, quickly, Stanislav Petrov, when a bunch of ICBMs were being launched at Russia in a nuclear first strike, he did not report this to his superior.
Okay, that's not...
I know, that's not what actually happened. He did not report this to his superiors as he was supposed to, as were his orders and training, so that they could then, you know, launch a counterattack. What he did instead was just say, there's no way the U.S. would start a nuclear strike with just five ICBMs. This doesn't seem right. I'm going to hold off on starting World War III. And it's a good thing because it turned out to be reflections off of a cloud screwing up the satellites. There was never actually any ICBMs with nukes being launched.
Mm-hmm.
So by disobeying his training and his orders, he basically saved the entire human race. And this right. is why we as rationalists have Stanislav Petrov Day on September 26th, where we all, you know, acknowledge the fact that we are alive and that we should all take time out of our day to not destroy the world whenever we can. And the thing about Stanislav Petrov is he's not the only person to do this. There were several times where the world almost ended and individual actors prevented it from happening. But after he did this, the fact that he is in a military organization and it is extremely important for soldiers to follow their orders, because you don't want every fucking grunt on the ground, you know, saying like, well, do we really need to take that building? I don't know. In my assessment, we don't. You'd need them to follow orders so you can actually win the battle and then therefore win the war. And he was punished for doing this, and he basically got to live in poverty after being kicked out of the military and stripped of all his ranks for saving the human race. And this is like in it's different scale, but it's, again, he did the right thing, but because the organization in question cannot stand to have its authority questioned at all for, you know, reasons with capital R, he had to be punished or seen to be punished so that other people wouldn't get the wrong idea. And it feels like Harry is the same kind of thing, that he did the right thing and everyone should follow his example and the world would be better if he did, but the organization had a vested interest in students always listening to the teachers, and so he had to be seen to be punished. And I don't think that's right. I mean, I understand the power structure's interest in making sure that that this punishment is followed through, but fuck that, man.
I mean, I think the scale of the punishment is relevant. Harry's punishment was extremely minor compared to living out your life in poverty.
Yeah. Not like crippling poverty, but
well, yeah,
he was
of course.
Poor. And he had a kind of a shittier life than he would have, lost his career.
Right. But if they had, like, given a small reprimand to Petrov, like, that wouldn't necessarily have been the best, but I would not be, like, super upset about it. And same goes for Harry.
Yeah, but that wouldn't have disincentivized other soldiers from not following orders, and that's what they really needed. And same with Harry, they needed to disincentivize other students from standing up to teachers and making their own decisions.
Yeah, but I think, like, people are smart enough to realize that Harry and Petrov were correct. And that's relevant.
Yeah, but I feel that the system was bad. And that is also relevant, and so I don't like it that they were defending the system. I would have, I don't know. To me, this would be one of those things that I could see as being necessary but shitty. And and it didn't seem like they were quite willing to say that it was shitty. But again, that's possibly just a difference of opinion. Like, sometimes having order really is that important, and some people are willing to make that trade-off. I guess I'm just not one of them. I don't know.
I mean, I am willing to make that trade-off in certain scenarios, but I'm not sure that school discipline is one of them.
Yeah. Oh, well, I don't know. That was just my thinking.
With, like, the Russian military, I'd be more willing to say that it's necessary, but, like, again, I still think the punishment was disproportionate.
Yeah. All right, well, that is all I had on the episode proper. There is some stuff in the Discord that I also had, but do you have Discord things or more stuff from the episodes?
I mean, with the Discord, it seems like the main points of discussion were Hermione's parents being dentists and how exactly BDSM-ish is the story.
The Hermione's parents being dentists, I almost don't even want to touch on until next episode, because that's a thing from next episode, you know? People were jumping the gun.
Right.
I was like, why is this even in the non-spoiler section when this is about something that hasn't been read yet?
Right. I guess, like, someone just, like, didn't realize or something. And then they're like, well, I mean, it's, like, two paragraphs or whatever into the next chapter. He's probably read it already anyways.
I am still shaking my finger at the Discord. This is why we have the spoilers channel.
Yes. It was a mistake, but it was a minor one.
Yeah. Do you want to save that particular discussion until we actually get to that episode then?
I mean, sure, we can. Okay. I'm down with that.
The other thing was the BDSM stuff again.
that's gonna stick with us the whole series. So.
That really is, yeah. I still don't see it. Did we talk about it last time?
We did not.
Okay.
Probably because my sister was there.
Alright.
She's not here this time, so. Okay. I mean, she just walked upstairs.
They've walked upstairs in a, that means you can't talk about it now, or that it's okay?
That means that she's no longer in earshot, although I am not sure if she's coming back.
Okay. Well, we can quickly switch away if she does, just, you know.
Okay.
Burst in and say something if I'm talking. Or you know, just put a dead silence.
I have headphones on, so you can say whatever you want.
I don't have much to say about it, except I think it's kind of silly. Like, I'm sure it'll come up again, but he saw these weird BDSM vibes, and I'm like, they're not BDSM vibes, because BDSM is specifically a sex thing. There's, yes, sure, Quirrell is, like, this guy who enjoys power and enjoys exerting his power over other people. So he acts kind of in a pushy, dominant way often, but that doesn't make it BDSM. That makes him, like, you know, a kind of asshole-ish boss or teacher.
Right. And I mean, like Yudkowsky said,
this was fantastic.
That line was great.
Apparently Yudkowsky listens to We Want More and reads the analysis that this Kron Oblivion, I think it is, does afterwards. Right.
I mean, we've known that he's been following the analyses for a few weeks, but I think this was the first time he responded to something. Actually, he might have just been responding to something in the discussion thread. I don't know if he was bringing up something from the episode. Yeah, but it was The Harry Quirrell dynamic does not have the BDSM nature, but many BDSM relationships have the Harry Quirrell dynamic.
Yes. Which I think was a very good way of putting it.
Mm-hmm. And, it's a I lot, mean...
Like, parents like, parents will spank their children, and sometimes spanking is used in sex play, but that's because the spanking comes from how parents treat children, not the other way around.
I mean, I don't know if it always comes from how parents treat children. It's also just... Like, even if... And, like, I know that spanking children is a thing that happens, but it... I mean, I never was, and it kind of appalls me that this is a thing people do.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, I'm not going to talk about my sex life, but... But, like, I don't think the parent-child thing existing is necessary for that.
Okay.
I guess.
Yeah.
But, like, there is clearly, like, there are similarities, but that doesn't necessarily make the Harry Quirrell dynamic BDSM.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't think anyone was ever claiming that it was.
Right. I think Brian is claiming that it was.
I mean, he was correct in his assessment that Yudkowsky probably is not entirely vanilla. And
yeah, but he was correct in the same way that people were saying, you know, Quirrell is Voldemort were correct. They were correct on accident.
I don't think he was correct on accident. Like, I don't think he was ever claiming anything more than these things seem suspiciously similar. And
I think any vanilla person could have written exactly that same thing, and I don't see how the two are connected in any way, really.
I don't think they're connected strongly, and I'm sure that a completely vanilla person could have written it, but I think they'd be slightly less likely to.
I think anyone who sees how some adults treat some children could have written that, because it's very much a sort of condescending and, power play sort of thing that some adults just treat kids that way, and anyone who'd seen that, I think, could have written that kind of character, even if they weren't into BDSM. I could be wrong, but...
I mean, again, like, you're totally right on that, and I think the connection that exists is kind of strenuous, but I'm not confident enough to say that it is 100% unrelated.
It's impossible to say that it's 100% unrelated because
of course,
when you write something, everything about your personality is related to what you write, but I just don't think there's any reasonable way to draw that inference from that scene.
Mm-hmm. I think maybe I was reading the connection that people were drawing is weaker than they were actually claiming, just because I was correcting it to something that made more sense to me, that rather than trying to actually figure out what they were saying.
Well, I think most people are saying it as a joke. I'm pretty sure the person who's saying it seriously is Brian.
I mean, people are definitely coming around with the I am a good boy thing.
Okay, that one line, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, again, like, it's totally plausible that there is absolutely no relation. Mm-hmm. But, like, it's also possible that it had some influence on his writing, if not a large one.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. People often ask their pets, you know, who's a good boy? Who deserves a treat now?
I mean, that's true. But, like, I think it's some lines would probably be slightly less, I guess, suggestive. But, I don't think the dynamic would be fundamentally altered if Yudkowsky didn't have BDSM experience.
Yeah. And it, you know, it can be read as BDSM if you want to. God, someone suggested that someone do a porn version of that scene, which I would have loved to do that. Like, that is a thing I would totally jump on if it wasn't the fact that I did the podcast version as well, and I don't want to be the same person that did both, you know?
I think having it be the same person is absolutely great.
I don't know.
I want to release a version of the podcast of the a version of the podcast with that spliced in.
Jesus. All of a sudden it's porn and people are like, what the fuck? Yeah, I don't know. Someone else needs to take up this mantle. Because as fun as that sounds, it would just be...
As much as I did the Gaston song last episode, I'm not sure I'm up for this one yet.
Oh, I didn't mean you.
But... I know you didn't mean me. Yeah.
Maybe someday we can work towards this. Oh. I did have one more thing from the episode. I just put it in a different place. I took notes in three different places. And do you mind if I bring up one more thing?
No, not at all.
Okay. Brian at one point asked, so does Harry's father's rock ever come up again? And there was just dead silence. And Brian says, I'm taking that as a yes. Which...
The silence always, I was listening to it on 1.5 times speed or something, so the silence felt like it was like less than half a second to me.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just really strange. It seemed like it was reacting to no one like jumping in immediately rather than an actual prolonged silence.
I think he already kind of suspected that unless someone replied immediately, it probably would, because they went into this whole discussion about how hard it is to avoid spoilers when... You know, the person you're directly talking to has read the whole thing, and any little reaction that they have is an insight, right?
I mean, I don't know. I feel like it's weird to call that an insight when it's a very easy prediction to make without anyone talking to you, even.
That's true. There was a lot of emphasis placed on that rock in the chapter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Someone was saying that, you know, everyone needs to just act like people who... Like Snape, people who have absolutely no idea what you're talking about would act in that situation. And Ask Who points out that trouble is in real life, that's not easy. When asked a direct question, to imagine yourself as someone who has different information and act accordingly takes some thinking time, which will be very noticeable to your questioner. So yeah, lying is hard.
Unless you're Voldemort and can just pull it off instantly.
Exactly, yeah.
Which I think... I don't think you can go full Voldemort skill level on that in real life, but you can probably come close enough that it's not a clear indication.
Well, Within Reason had this awesome idea. He said, I would prefer that Stephen's stock answer be, it's the most important part of the story. To, like, any request like that.
If I ever do a podcast... Wait. I guess this is a podcast. Let me learn more.
Technically it is, yes.
If I ever do one that's not being released as the story comes out, I will use that line.
Excellent. And that feels like a very Yudkowsky-esque line, too.
It does.
Like he also, you know, kind of said at some point that his father's rock is the most important thing, the most important part of the story, before it was revealed what the father's rock would be used for. He said, you know, yes, I'm going to make Hermione a sparkling unicorn princess, and then does exactly that. Yeah. So I think the just, you know, the lying by saying the exact truth in a way that would not be believed is a wonderful way to do this.
I'll keep that in mind if Yudkowsky ever does more writing.
Yeah.
To just believe anything he says, take anything he says at face value.
Oh, well, as soon as he said that she was going to be a sparkly unicorn princess, I assumed that something like that would happen. I wasn't sure exactly what, but I was like, yeah, this is exactly the sort of thing Yudkowsky would do.
And he did it.
Yep. Oh, and they said near the end that they're 25% of the way through in chapters, but not in word count, and someone on the Discord went and looked it up, and actually, it's pretty close to 25% of the way through word count, too.
Really?
Yeah,
I expected to have been, like, 1/6 through word count.
It feels like it. I think maybe because, like, the beginning stuff is light and fluffy, and it goes by rather quickly, and as we get into the later stuff, it gets... just heavier and denser and more emotionally laden, so it impacts you more and it feels more substantial, I think, is probably why it feels like more words.
I mean, I vaguely remember before I was listening to a podcast, I downloaded, like, the book files, and I feel like the first book was shorter than some of the others. I don't remember the exact lengths, though.
I think when I broke them up into the books with the podcast, they were roughly the same size each, not quite, but it wasn't too far different. But
I thought some were like 8 and some were 12. Like, I feel like there is a like also, at least over an hour gap.
There's 6 books, so at most we'd be 1/6 of the way through rather than 1/4.
Yeah, if they're the same length. Yeah. So,
but those are
That's confusing to me.
Yeah.
But
I did not double check the numbers, but there was a graph with lines and everything, so can't argue with a graph with lines.
I might want to double check those numbers, although I'm not sure how to check word count. That sounds like a pain.
Word count should be pretty easy. There is a master document that just has the entire thing and has one.
Oh, right. I do have the PDF downloaded. So I can probably,
Yeah.
Or I guess I can just use page count for that. It should be close enough.
It should, yes.
Want me to do that right now?
No, we can leave the audience on tenterhooks and we'll tell them at the next episode.
Okay.
If there is a next episode. this didn't come up in the episode, I don't think, but it did come up on the Discord again, is the was it ugly how Harry saved Lasoth with the
right
bones?
Right,
yeah.
I feel like we covered that discussion pretty thoroughly last episode. I'm not sure. Did you have anything you wanted to add?
I think we covered it pretty well too. I did have a couple things that I saw which I thought were interesting, so I figured I would throw them in, but yeah, we don't need to spend a lot of time on it. Within Reason basically said that he thinks, after more consideration, maybe what Brian's issue is that Harry is in danger of caring more about looking cool than about actually helping people. Like, Hermione would have done something different, and like, if Tonks or Cedric had been intimidating that way, then it would have been okay for them because they're already known as like tough guys and stuff, but Harry is directly profiting from the way he intervened by building up his reputation more, so maybe that's what Brian finds ugly. And then Matt, Mordinamale, Matt the Doof guy, said that perhaps the steel man of Brian's position would be that it seems ugly because Harry can be construed as merely seeking to play and win at the very dominance game that he thinks he's too good for. He doesn't walk up to them calmly and attempt to de-escalate the situation reasonably and rationally. He steps in with clearly confrontational approach and makes the other boys submit. He also points out that the thing about Harry is it generally doesn't occur to him that he can engage with a situation in any manner other than with pistols drawn. Which I think is a damn good point and is a very interesting character note about Harry. So another one of those cool insights from Matt.
Yeah, I think that is a much better description of what Brian is thinking than we came up with last episode.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure I'm going to say I endorse that wholeheartedly before I think about it more, but it definitely seems like a good explanation to me.
It's nice to have more possible viewpoints to consider, at any rate.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, I think that's everything I got. Griffin Taper quickly pointed out that in the episode they said that it feels like Dumbledore's presence has been ramped down, at least in book one, compared to the canon books. But that in the canon books, Dumbledore basically was not in the story at all until much later in the series. So it's been ramped up quite a bit with Harry having three meetings with Dumbledore over, the Snape thing and the chicken and the Father Stone and the Occlumency thing, that it's actually been ramped up quite a bit in the early chapters of HPMR compared to canon.
I mean, I do think that Dumbledore definitely has had a larger role, but I'm not sure I'd say he was completely left out of the early books, because wasn't there a scene with the Mirror of Ezred? Or Dumbledore talks to Harry?
I think so. It was a fairly short one, but there's also the fact that the first book itself was really short. I mean, it was a YA kids book. It was not that thick. So he wouldn't have had a lot of opportunity to interact anyway, just on the number of pages that it was.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't think they had any in-depth conversations, but like, did Harry have any in-depth conversations in that book?
No, maybe with Hermione and Ron on the train.
Maybe I don't know.
McGonagall a little bit. I think also probably our vision of Dumbledore is greatly magnified by the fact that the actor that played him in the second movie and onward is just he's a large presence. He really takes up the camera's attention, and that's good in an actor. And it probably just, you know, skews our memory as to how that went as opposed to the books. But I don't know, because, you know, it's been so damn long since I read the books. I don't even remember. I just know that, you know, Dumbledore was the mentor figure, and usually mentor figures are really big in books. They have an outsized impact at the very least.
Yeah, but I don't think he showed up much more than he does in Methods Rationality.
Okay. Oh, well, I am completely out of things. Do you have more things that I have not touched on?
I would like to note that Yukatsuki's broken kneecaps are worth one empanada.
Wow, you can get them real cheap. Steven, cheap muscle. Yes, there we go.
I think that's all I have.
That's pretty cool. Empanada is like a pastry with chocolate and stuff in it, right?
I have no idea what an empanada is. I'm sure I've had one before, but I don't, like, I don't try very hard to remember the Spanish food vocabulary other than, like, tortilla and taco.
Do you not have a lot of Spanish places on the East Coast?
We do. We just don't eat there particularly often, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, I gotta take Brian and Steven out for an empanada at some point just to thank them for the podcast, because it is adding a lot of enjoyment to my life.
It is a great podcast.
Yeah. Okay. Is that everything then?
I believe so.
All right. Thank you for joining me again. This has been fun.
It has.
And, I don't know, maybe we will be back next week. We will see.
Hopefully.
Yeah. This feels very abrupt and weird to end like this, but I don't know what else to say, and I know you gotta, like, go in the next few minutes anyway.
I mean, we should probably figure out how to conclude these better. I think Steven and Brian had problems with that for a while.
Yeah. Okay, well then I'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, see ya.
All right, bye. Bye-bye.